According to my recollection, we're at about verse 4.
Yep.
Is that what you got?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll just go ahead and get us started by reading three verses. Actually, you could say there's four, but I don't really want to get into eight right away. So I'll just read the first three, and we can work on that. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things. Believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, and then love never fails. So this is in the context again of this whole idea that he's talking about, the first part of the chapter where he's talking about you can have all these different abilities, spiritual abilities and gifts, but if you don't have love, they're nothing, he says. It profits me nothing anyway, he says in verse 3. So one of the things I've heard people say about this passage is, well, you just put your name in where love is and you read it. And it's kind of one of those silly things, but it's also actually works pretty well as a check, right? Tony suffers long as in kind. Tony does not envy. Tony does not parade himself. Tony is not puffed up, right? You just go down the line reading that and get real convicted. And it's just the same sort of thing as that love, as we become more mature as Christians, then the things that love is should be more, we should see those things in our own lives more, right? I mean, that's the idea. I mean, we're supposed to be conformed to the image of Jesus, and God is love is one of the things the Bible says among a lot of things, but God is love. It does say that. And so there's these attributes of love. So what do you think about that list?
Well, it's so different from the cultural definition. I don't remember, maybe in the 70s or 80s, it was a real popular saying for a while. Maybe it was Dear Abby or somebody. Love means never having to say you're sorry. Remember hearing that
That's
phrase?
Story,
what a bunch of hooey, you know. I mean, it's just ridiculous. What a stupid thing to say. Love is never having to say you're sorry.
Oh, I remember.
Doesn't sound right to me.
Love story. Mm-hmm. She took forever to die.
Is it from a movie? Is that what it was?
Terrible.
Yeah.
I'm romantic.
Yeah, isn't he?
I do see something in reference to love descriptive here and what's going on in the world today. This is very objective love, where today we have a more of a subjective love,
right?
Where it's an actual, just looked upon as a feeling. This is more like an act of the will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you see, you know, words like, bears all things, you know, when you bear something, that's not just something you feel, that's something you're committed to. It means enduring under something that's hard to endure under. It's not something you just feel like doing. In fact, you feel like the opposite. You feel like not hanging in there. So when it talks about things like bears all things, there's this idea of commitment, right? That you're committed to being engaged in that situation and being in it rather than just, oh, well, today I don't feel like I like this. I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's one of the mistakes the culture makes about the idea of love sometimes is this idea, well, you know, it's best not to be married because then people only stay together if they're really committed to one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they don't have a feeling of love, then they're free to leave. Well, that's not the biblical idea of love. The biblical idea of love has a commitment associated with it. And it's not something that changes based on the circumstances. It's something where a person makes a commitment and then they stay within that commitment and develop these other attributes. You know, for example, in verse 5, love does not seek its own. Those five words there are probably at the root of a lot of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And so the world wants to put forth the idea that, you know, that love is this wonderful ephemeral thing, and on the other hand, we have a culture and a worldview that's promoting self, you know, maybe more than many other times in the history of our country. I mean, not just in a marriage, but even we don't even like to make cultural commitments to our community, or, you know what I mean, or even the military or whatever, because we want to be our own person. So when you look at this love thing, when it says love does not seek its own, I mean, that's a big, big aspect of what disrupts. I mean, one of the reasons families are falling apart is that people aren't seeking what's good for the other person. They're seeking what's good for themselves.
Yeah.
Ultimately, at some point. So there's that whole aspect of self versus others that's in here as well.
Well, the word itself, just the word love, is treated pretty flippant. You see the bumper stickers, I love my truck. I love pizza.
Love my dog.
I love my dog.
You can't love a dog?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, just checking.
If you're patient and kind and...
Tony, is all these words, at least in this translation, love, is it all the same, or are they using a different form of definition?
It's basically agape.
It's all agape.
Mm-hmm. Agape, which is the more intense word for love. It's more intense than eros or phileo, which are some of the others, or phileo would be like Philadelphia, brotherly love. So this is agape, but, you know, he's trying to get us to look at the actual attribute. It'd be like trying to define a color, right? The word love itself, in a sense, it's like meaningless until you can define what is love, right? You know, it's like where Pilate asks Jesus, what is truth, right? But what is love is there's different ideas about what love is, and then when he gives this list, he's trying to describe. It's almost like love is a diamond, and he's describing the different facets of the gem. On this face here, you see suffering. Here you see kindness. Here you see lack of envy. You know, and so you can turn it around and look at the different facets, and each facet on its own is part of what makes up the gem, but the gem is the whole set of all those faces at one time. And so, you know, just speaking from my own experience, you know, I might be able to work on one or two aspects and be making progress on that, and then something comes up and shows that, you know what, this other aspect here, man, you don't have that one at all.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this constant... I think there's like a tuning that's constantly going on where there'll be certain things in your life that come up that show you that you need to work in these certain areas, and then as you focus on those, there's a tendency to forget there's these other aspects too that come into it.
Yeah.
So in this situation here, you can see a number of things here that he's mentioning that do fit really well, not only our own culture and our own situation individually, but the church at Corinth, because in there he talks about love does not envy, love does not parade itself, and it's not puffed up. And we've seen already in the beginning of this book, and we'll see in the next chapter especially, a lot of hints that people were seeking their own and they were puffed up even just in the church service. And so the focus on the use of their gifts was themselves rather than the edification of others.
So do you think the reason that Paul wrote them, well, God through Paul wrote it like that, is because we don't naturally think of it like this? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because it's specific, I guess the question I had is similar to the fruit of the Spirit. Would you say that the closer you are walking with the Lord, the more these will manifest as a whole? Can someone show real strength in a few of these, but quite a weakness in some others? Yet, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying it well.
I think there's a lot of interaction between them.
Or do they come kind of shining through all kind of at the same time, if you're really tuned in to?
It's just my opinion, but I would tend to say it's more of a concert situation.
Yeah.
For example, when you look at some of these, they're interrelated. For example, bearing all things and not being provoked. Or some of the others, like don't envy versus parading yourself or being puffed up. Those things are often related in that, if you've ever met somebody who is fairly vain and very controlling, generally they are seeking their own, and they are jealous of other people getting attention potentially. So you can see how it's easier to see how the negatives of these, I think, interrelate.
Yeah.
But I think the positives do too, because when it talks about enduring things, part of enduring things is this idea that you're not seeking your own, right? Because something's going on that isn't what you'd prefer.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you're not getting your rights, and so you're allowing your rights to, something that you could push for, you're not pushing for, because you're showing patience and enduring something. So a lot of this looks like kind of like if you could imagine some sort of an animal in a box with holes, and you can poke sticks in the holes and it doesn't react that much.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when we don't have as much love, we tend to react more strongly and more quickly to things that provoke us. Envy is something that that provokes a person, or the desire for attention. Here when it says, the other thing here, in this phrase where it says, thinks no evil, I think if you look at that and at the words involved there, it's actually talking about, it's not talking about whether you think about evil. It's whether you're thinking, taking account of what's happening to you and keeping a ledger of the evil things that other people are doing.
Well, kind of like the account you read, you preached on yesterday, right? Right at the very end. His first name was, that was martyred in Acts?
Oh, yeah. Stephen.
I mean, right. the very last phrase of that passage, don't hold these sins against these people. I mean, wow. That's like up second to Jesus saying, on the cross what he said. I mean, that's just like you brought out, just like, that's the most amazing thing, you know, they're stoning him.
Mm-hmm.
That's love. That's biblical love at its highest. He said hard things.
Calling down lightning on them.
Yeah, he said hard things to them, but God gave him the words, so it wasn't him saying it. But yet, he, through the Spirit, was able to love them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Plus, he could see that it was not them, it was demons.
Yeah, yeah.
So where it says there, thinks no evil, the word is the word that we get logic from, or it means calculating or keeping a mental record or a ledger, be used for describing keeping a ledger. So it's basically saying, you know, don't keep a ledger of evil.
Yeah.
It's one way to think about it. So it has an aspect that's tied to forgiveness, right? In that
it's self-destructive.
It's this issue that when somebody comes and harms you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your tendency is to want to react from that and to keep a record of it and to hold a grudge,
right?
To take offense, and hold it. And this is talking about the opposite approach, where you allow those things to go by, because, like it says elsewhere, love covers a multitude of sins, and it's talking about sins of others that are sins against you, and they are true sins against you. It's not an issue whether they're real or not. The issue is, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with the fact that other people are sinning against you? Are you going to start keeping a tally and build a pile of those things that you're going to hold on to, or are you going to allow that to go by because your love for that relationship and that person is such, you know, it's like in a marriage, right? I mean, over the years, there's certain things that happen that you can go back to and think about that were really hard things that happened in the marriage. And the question is, are you going to hang on to those things?
Mm-hmm.
And are you going to keep bringing them up, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, trot them out again? Or are you going to let go of them and really realize that what happened there, whatever, that's something that love will cover if you truly have love? And so there's this whole idea there of keeping short accounts, basically. And one of the ways you do that is not only, you know, confessing where you're sinning with somebody, but also on the other side of the fence, not building up the accounts in the first place.
When you talk to people, especially like where I was at, counseling type stuff, people, they hold grudges, you know, scorecard, but you know, they have taken it and it's legitimate because they were wrong. You know, mom, dad, uncle, whatever. I don't even want to mention it, but I've heard people say. And then, but there is, and what it does, it destroys their love.
Mm-hmm.
And if their love is short circuited, and then when they, well, we've all heard it, forgive, which is extremely hard to do when you carried it for so long. Once they forgive, then they're capable of loving again.
Mm-hmm.
The other person doesn't even show any love. They don't even hit, you're not even on their radar. But because you have put the burden down, you can actually love them no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a, people I've seen watch like this, they're so churned up, they've got medical problems. I mean, they're just nervous wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been carrying them for 30 years. I was one of them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So that's part of that freedom
that
Jesus talks about.
Well, it's also part of that idea that, you know, there's ideas about what the passage means, that if you don't forgive your brother, God will not forgive you, right? And Greg has always taught it that God will not relieve you of the consequences of holding on that grudge. It's not like you're not forgiven before God, but he will not forgive you of that grudge that you're holding until you do, you know. That's how it's kind of the same thing you're saying, until you can put that down, you will carry that with you your whole life, and God will not he won't take that from you unless you put that down, and then he will. That's kind of how Greg is, I think, has taught that passage anyway. Well, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's the idea. There isn't, it's not talking about that you're, obviously your forgiveness is based on the work of Jesus,
yeah. Right?
So it's not talking about your standing before God ultimately. It's
yeah.
talking about your walk day to day, what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
The consequences.
Yeah.
Well, plus you don't even really have the power. I mean, when you think you're holding on to whether you're going to forgive somebody or not, that's kind of a lack of faith in God anyways, because you don't even have that power of whether you're going to forgive somebody or not. God's the one who makes the decision anyway. So you have to just let that go. That's having faith in Him, but it's hard thing to, it's easy to think about it.
It's easy said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Does that say that God won't forgive you, or does it say that you won't be forgiven? If you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven.
I'm not sure.
I think it's
yeah, it probably doesn't. I probably misquoted there.
It's Matthew 6, verse
7. Didn't mean to derail it.
That's right. I'm
not
exactly
how.
For if you forgive others for their transgressions, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others, then your Father will not forgive your transgressions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets back to that whole issue of those who have been forgiven much ought to forgive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the parable, that whole business about the guy who writes off that his accounts are written off and
yeah.
he won't.
Yeah.
He won't let anyone else go in the
right.
same way.
But from what, over time, people have been, I think that's what a lot of what's wrong now with people in general. We never, like, people come from busted up homes, you know, got one, two, three, you know, you got a mother that's had three or four husbands, and she's got kids from three or four different guys, but what happens is there's so much about love that's taught from the parents. What actually, see parents interact with each other, so they have an example of their spouses, either boy or girl, and see how they interact. That example is pretty much, a lot of it's gone, even in the church.
Mm.
And so people don't, in a sense, you hear it, they don't know what love is. Well, love is, is an action. It's not an emotion. An emotion gets hurt pretty easy, but love, what you were saying, is a commitment. I'm gonna love that person no matter if they act like they're not, what they're doing is not loving. I'm still gonna love them. I'm that committed to that person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna run from them because they're not acting like the way I think they should. I'll try to get them to go to that, you know, to that point, but I'm not going to give up on them to be that kind of commitment.
Yeah.
Love is an actual commitment.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it comes into these phrases, love doesn't seek its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's not provoked. And it's, bears all things.
It does not take into account a wrong suffered.
Right. So it's in a sense, it's a realization too that perfect love never exists in human relations, right? Not in this life. And so for love to work when there's like more than one person, which, you know, relationship, two or more people involved, then you're gonna, unless you have these aspects of, unless there's commitment, it's not gonna work. There has to be some amount of commitment, right?
Yeah.
Because things are not always rosy all the time. There's
mm-hmm.
times and situations that come up where there's all different reasons, you know. People forget things, they do things that are dumb, they do things unintentional, they get real tired one day, you know, or it's late
yeah.
at night and you're packing, you know, all those
mm-hmm.
situations come up. And that's where it has to be a commitment.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be a commitment. And I mean, one of the things our culture is really big on, I mean, this passage has been a challenge for 2,000 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like just our culture that has this problem. I mean, but it is really true that our culture is very, the idea of faithfulness and sticking with something when it's not giving you what you think you should be getting is a real rare situation. And you add to that the mixing of the culture that we have where you know, in the old days you grew up in a certain town, you might spend most of your life in that town. People weren't as mobile, jobs weren't changing, and people weren't moving so much. I mean, that all adds a complication to the mix. And when you're moving all the time, I mean, it's real convenient because you can burn bridges a lot and still get by.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like people who cruise on sailboats, right? They're always lifting the anchor, going to the next port. But when you're in a community or a church, for example, and you're in there for the long haul, you gotta get past that stuff. You gotta make it work because you're not gonna just take off and disappear somewhere. And a marriage is like that too, right?
But you only hold the mask for so long, and eventually you're going to get tired of holding it,
right?
And people are going to see what you really are and how you really are.
I think love is putting the other person first. Mm-hmm. And if you do that all the time, and if the other person is doing the same thing, then there's no problem. I mean, especially in marriage. I mean, it does sometimes get... where you want to go eat. I don't know where you want to go eat. I don't know where you want to go eat. You never get a decision made, you know, like the vultures.
You flip a coin.
Yeah. Hey, flap.
Yeah. But I think if that's the case, then it's hard to do. Like, we're supposed to love our enemies, and it's hard to do, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I think only Jesus can do that.
Yeah, the Holy Spirit has to be in that. I mean, on Sunday I was teaching on the end of the martyrdom of Stephen, and so I was sharing different accounts of martyrdom in history that have been written up on different books, and some of the things that people do and say it's supernatural. It's just like, no way could you do that in that situation. I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
I know I couldn't.
Yeah, you always wonder what you would do, but what you'd like to do and what you do may be two different things. So.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So really, when it, you know, and there's other passages where it basically says that when Jesus is asked about the great commandment, you know, he gets back to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's love God.
Mm-hmm. Love your neighbor.
And love your neighbor. And then he says that in those, that basically is fulfillment of all the law and the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you really get down to the law and the prophets and all the complexities and things about, you know, little things like it says, if your enemy's ox falls in a ditch,
mm-hmm.
you shall surely pull it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a funny little law, but it's essentially love your enemy,
yeah.
you know. It's just saying, well, what would you want if your ox fell in a ditch, right? And he was there. You'd want him to pull it out. So really, when it comes down to it, there's the law is like all these fences trying to corral us into love. And then the law of Christ is kind of this golden carrot. This is, go to that. And if you go to that and do that, you don't need to worry about the fences. You don't need to worry about all the rest of it, because you will be living in a way where you will be blessing your neighbor, and you will be a blessing to your kids and your wife and everything else.
Yeah, if we're, in a sense, we're supposed to mirror Christ, and you think how committed he is to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just
and
like
we can't even make a tenth of that, or even probably 1% of that, but yet we're supposed to try.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
And when you think about it, there's, you think about every day what he's trying to, you know, he'll touch whoever he wants to touch, but you think that he stays committed to us no matter what we do.
Well, it's and like you were saying, you know, Tony is patient, Tony is kind, but I was thinking of it too. It's really interesting to read these verses. That's how Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he is. He doesn't hold the account. And when you just realize just he should hold the account, you know, that's how I feel. He bears all things. And when you realize that this is the kind of love that he has for you, then it's easier to let those things, you know, not hold other people accountable.
Well, when that's why it was made so easy for us, I think, you know, we just have to believe. And we believe in Jesus and what he did for us, and that he was buried and rose from the dead. And it's simple. These other things we can't do. Anything like this we can't do. I mean, we can try it, and we should probably try, but in reality, we can't do it. The law, all this stuff about love. I know, I was just thinking today that I really don't love, you know, like I should. And, you know, I don't love people the way I should. But if we keep in mind the fact that there's really no condemnation in that if we can't do any of this stuff, or we can't do, mm-hmm. I mean, the Holy Spirit would help us do as much as, you know, help mm-hmm. us do things, but we won't be able to do that until we die.
Mm-hmm.
So all we have to do is believe, and truly believe that Jesus, and then that's it. It's easy for us sheep.
Well, but it does tug, doesn't it? I mean, if you feel like I know I'm not always, I guess that I'm not always loving like that, but I'll notice myself when I have thoughts like, oh, this is not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is not what I'm, you know, I mean, it does.
But I think,
pull.
I don't, honestly don't believe we're supposed to have self-condemnation. I think we're supposed to realize that what we did is wrong and acknowledge the fact, you know, and the next time, hopefully we can do better, you know, but I don't think we're supposed to condemn ourselves. The devil condemns. We don't condemn. God doesn't condemn us, you know. He knows what we're made of, and because he made us, and so it's not an issue. I mean, all this stuff in here, I think, is the guide, you know, and we can read this stuff, and we can say, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do that, you know, and after a while we get so beat up, we beat ourselves up so bad that we can't, you know, I mean, we start wondering whether we're saved or not, you know.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, we can't do it like Jesus does it, obviously, but I think...
We're supposed to try. I'm not saying...
Yeah, no, I know, but I think we also should be able to say that over the course of our lifetime, we ought to be progressing on these things.
Yeah,
right?
But what about the person who doesn't have a lifetime with Jesus? He only has...
Well, that's somebody else. That's
no,
I'm talking
no,
about
sorry,
you.
I realize that. But what I'm saying is I don't think God...
No, I don't think that...
looks at it that way.
No, I'm not saying that they're worse in God's eyes as far as their standing goes. But I'm saying that, you know, the scriptures do say things about, the scriptures do make promises about maturity, about growth, about, what are some of the peace. And so if we're Christians and we're serious about following Jesus over the years, we ought to see some progress in our lives. How much and how fast, you know, I don't know. You can't, you know, put a finger on that. Everyone's different. But for where we started to where we end, we ought to see some progress. Or, you know, because if we don't see some progression over our lives, then we're not growing in the way that we're supposed to. Or the scriptures are faulty. well, we don't want to say the scriptures are faulty, right? So, I mean, they do promise. They do, I mean, Jesus does promise the truth will make you free,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that there is this issue of we can't be perfect, we can't become Jesus in this life, but at the same time, our conscience and the Holy Spirit and brothers and sisters in Christ and the scriptures all bring to our attention different things at different times that hopefully we, as we meditate on them and think through them, or we blow it. What more often happens is we blow it, and then the next day or the next week or the next month we think through it a few times, and in the process of that we come to a deeper understanding of what went wrong, what we should have done, and then the next time we'll maybe not blow it as badly. We might still blow it, but maybe not to the same degree. That's progress. That's growth. And I think that's all that, in a sense, that's all God is looking for. I know that's all any pastor is looking for, is growth. That's all they care about is growth. They're not worried about whether somebody is perfect or not, or how far along they are. They're more worried about, are they teachable, and are they growing, and are they serious? And that's all you can really ask.
A reoccurring, something that trips you up that's reoccurring. And I'm talking about, you know, once a week, every other week, a month, where you know that you get into a certain, and you react a certain way. That's when you have to sit back and ask God, why do I react that way every time that shows up?
Yeah.
Why do I do that? And He'll reveal it to you. You have to have faith. And once He reveals that to you, then that's when you have to, whatever it is, deal with. Maybe it was something that somebody did to you, or something that you did to somebody else, or whatever. You need to deal with that. You know, there was a ton of people in that other church. You sit in a Sunday morning, there's head was bowed and everything like that, but you didn't know what was going on in their head. And it was, and that all short circuits everything. And when they finally figure it out, it's almost like they get freed up all over again. It's extremely amazing. Just watch the relaxation. They just kind of sit back and, mm-hmm. boy, I'm glad that it was scary walking into it, but now I'm free. They're free. They can pray better. They can go to God easier because it works. It works their relationship sideways, but it also warps the other thing. Just because the love factor, they don't understand their concept of love short circuits the up and down, and it just kind of made my mouth drop open every time I heard some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, can I read something?
Sure.
Verse number. My eyesight is not as good as it used to be.
I'm going to borrow my glasses.
Welcome to the club.
Well, this is, I'm going to have to go to an eye guy and get some decent glasses. I got a good story about that. I love them every time. What, it was verse 6. I suppose we put the word, think of evil, does not rejoice in iniquity. This is referring to love, right?
Mm-hmm.
But rejoices in the truth. And even love needs balance. And so we got to remember, we have to love our brothers, but there's balance there, because
right.
sometimes even Jesus
yeah.
just nailed those guys.
Right.
He wasn't showing this love your neighbor, and yet there's a
yeah,
time when we
point.
Have to just, it isn't a time for love.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. when you can suck every bit of energy out of your life, just loving everybody, and you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah, being a cosmic love blob.
But that is love. That's uh-huh. but what you see. You're not like Stephen. What
right.
he was
that's
saying.
Your motive.
What Stephen was saying to those people listening
was
to
love.
Him
yeah.
was biblical love.
It was harsh, mm-hmm. but
it was. He does not rejoice in the truth. He was telling them the truth, and
yeah.
that was love. We mm-hmm. don't see it that way, but
when
he was saying,
yeah.
your
child, they'll
yeah.
love him.
Yeah,
so,
that's still love.
Yeah, it's love.
Yeah, that's what Mark's bringing up.
Yeah.
That balance.
Yeah.
And that's another thing where the culture definitely got that off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They think love is not ever saying any negative thing to anybody.
Yeah.
Flattery is one of the most unloving things you can do. That's
Well, depends who you're giving it to.
Saying something that when we say saying something negative, we take negative and throw it in the wrong place.
Yeah.
It wasn't negative.
No. It was perceived that way.
I just said something negative, and it was the truth. So mm-hmm. it was negative truth. That doesn't make any sense.
No. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Well, hard to hear for the listener because they're convicted by it.
Right.
That's not an ultimately a negative thing if they're, you know.
It's positive. Kind of
right.
Yeah.
It's like what the church is saying about homosexuality. I mean, we're not rejoicing in iniquity. We're rejoicing in the truth, and what we're saying is considered to be judgmental and harsh.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's loving, actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is.
Because it's the real path to peace and correct relation with God. And to say the other path is, you know, people who are promoting that are actually leading those people or endorsing mm-hmm. those people in a way of life that's destructive and mm-hmm. in a pattern that's away from God. And we know anything away from God ultimately is not good. It doesn't matter what it looks like. It's leading away from God, and God is the definition of goodness and perfection is to be in alignment with God and be close to God.
Mm-hmm.
How can tickling ears be loving? You know, saying what they want to hear. You know, it's okay. Be how you are. Whatever you are is good. God loves you. If that person believes that, they're going to go to hell. How is that loving?
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton says that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She doesn't like Christians who are saying homosexuality is unacceptable.
I know, they're not Christian, though. They say they're Christians, but so do Mormons. They're not Christians.
Yeah.
You know, one comment that Jerry was making about these things in Corinthians 13, and if I'm weak in these areas and I'm compelled by God to improve in these, you know, and you know, let's say I really blew it and I feel bad about it. That I don't think that's not condemnation.
No.
That's God.
You're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
I didn't mean. You
right.
Because you're there's a difference
convicted,
between conviction and condemnation.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Condemnation is more of a long term just
view
of yourself.
You're
right.
Supposed to be convicted.
Yeah.
That's what this book is.
Yeah.
A bunch of convictions here.
Condemnation, you hear people saying, oh, God can't forgive me for what I did.
Yeah.
In a sense, they're condemning themselves.
Yeah.
Because I've done something so bad
right.
that I can't be forgiven
and
for.
And that's pride, too, big time.
Pride?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking you're so special,
you're
beyond what God can forgive.
Yeah.
It's
mm-hmm.
pride, Matt. It's kind of masked, but it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And when you point that out to them, they don't like it because then they have to face up to the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of hiding behind that mask, like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, when you look at it, genuine love is other-centered. I mean, that's a simple way to kind of look. If you look at a lot of this, suffering, lack of envy, not parading, not being puffed up, not behaving rudely, I mean, not seeking your own, it's, you know, really when you look at it, it's centering on the truth and other-centered.
Yeah.
You know?
When I was a kid, there was a song that we used to sing, and it was Joy, J-O-Y, and it was Jesus, others,
mm-hmm.
then you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you spelled joy, was by loving Jesus first and loving others
mm-hmm.
before you loved yourself.
Go to a church business meeting when they're talking about money or something that is, and you watch people just slice each other up.
Yeah, right. Really.
If you want to see the true heart of a church,
oh,
that's where I go. Go to one of their business meetings where they got something going on, and you sit back like this and watch them, and you just see the knives come out and they cut each other apart.
Really?
And you see, you go, well, there's that team, and then there's that team, and then there's that team. It's really amazing. I love to watch it. Yeah, well, in a sense, I love to watch it. It just, you see the exact. If you want to join, if you're going to join that church, go to there. because then you see what exactly you're going to join. Because it's easier for I never really liked the guy that much, but he always said it's easier for you.
Let's see, which one is that on the list?
He said it's easier for you. How do you say? It's easier for you
to start over.
Not getting your point across very well.
It's easier for them to pull you down than for you to pull them up. Mm-hmm. So when you go there, if you hang there too much, you're going to start acting just like them, possibly. So you go there and you see, you go to places where people act like themselves.
Well, that's what, yeah, I mean, ultimately what you want in relationship is transparency. And so mm-hmm. where there isn't transparency, there are certain situations, events or happenings that bring mm-hmm. out transparency
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because they're the place where people have a vested interest where they'll drop aside their mask and the real them comes out, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what you want to be is you want to be somewhere where that doesn't happen, you know,
mm-hmm.
where people are consistent, whether it's in a business meeting or whether they're whatever it is.
For the most part, I try to stay clear of people.
Which one of that? Which one
of that? I do.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's verse 14. Sorry.
I steer clear of people as much as possible because I...
But you know, when you say that, not everybody's like that.
No,
right?
Not everybody's that way.
See, so
well,
you're kind of saying when you say that you steer clear of people, that all people are like that all the
no,
time.
No, that's
not
what I'm saying. But when you have, it's the tough part about it is the way I am. I know what people are before I even get to them, and then I sit there and I. And then you listen to them talk, and I'm going, that's not what you're about. And I finally had to learn to keep my mouth shut.
Well, I think, you know, there's wisdom. I mean, all of us, there is wisdom about knowing what situations
mm-hmm.
come up in where we can speak into them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where we can't speak into them because the people aren't ready for input or it's not an occasion where input would be received.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just
and I think it's wise in those cases to avoid those things if you know that that's what's going to happen. On the other hand, I think you know we do if we can see those things and we know those are problems, then we do have a responsibility in other settings with those people to bring those things up,
mm-hmm.
right? Because otherwise iron never sharpens iron. I mean, it's one of those things because, I mean, ultimately, you know, I mean, the biggest area that I have to work on, I mean, a lot I have to work on, but the biggest area I have to work on is loving people. Because, you know, I've spent most of my life with computers. And they're not so bad. I mean, I hate computers. but I'm just saying that I'm not, like, yeah. I'm not naturally really overly relational. And so, but that's to say, that's also to say though that you know God is his primary interest is relationship
yeah.
with people. It's people and it's relationship. And so we have a responsibility, I guess, if we're Christians, we have a responsibility to suffer long
mm-hmm.
and bear all things,
mm-hmm.
which means we're going to be in situations where it's frustrating and we don't really even want to be there, but that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with what God called us to do and walk in, and so I think there's wisdom about how you do it and when you do it, but I don't think we can escape in general. I think there are situations where we definitely have to plug in and. Well, like even in this Bible study, I mean, you've probably of everybody in this room, I've probably met with you more weekly nights than any you and Kathy than anyone else, right? Well, so you don't like people, you say, and that might be true in general in the big settings and the more formal settings or where there's alternate motives. But when it comes down to just sitting down with the Bible and talking
mm-hmm.
with people. You seem to like that well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you like as Kathy, I steer clear of big groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like being around it.
I don't mind
too much. Because you don't hear very well.
Well, it might be that, but mostly I think it's just because of what I am.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think people. I think it is, you know, I think there, the bigger the group of people, the less, the more challenging it is to have meaningful interaction
mm-hmm.
where that's transparent,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just think how it scales.
If you're a person who's not a person who can engage in small talk,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least to begin with, well then you have trouble around people because
mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do with it until you become familiar with them. Or, you know, you can't just jump right into some big
discussion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that, I know that because I'm a lot like what you're talking about there too. So.
Uh-huh.
And I. And not only that, for some people I think it's a little traumatic doing things like that. You know, it's like you got a cow check and lay on here.
sure.
It's but it's you know, it's some for some people it's hard. It's difficult to be around a bunch of people, and
mm-hmm.
hearing is one thing. I'm
mm-hmm.
already hearing too,
mm-hmm.
so that's one thing. But that's an excuse actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to be off for some people to be off by themselves.
Right.
And I know that's not what God wants from us, and it's a hard thing for
yeah.
some people.
Yeah, I think there's a situation too where, like we talked about giftings previously, where we are different. People are different, and there are things that people who like to be more on their own and in smaller groups, there are gifts and capabilities and things that they will do that are a huge benefit to the body of Christ that other people who are more social animals and like to be engaged in a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
they have other giftings. So
mm-hmm.
so it's not like Jesus wants to make us all exactly the same, I don't think. But
mm-hmm.
but I think we do. I think we have these tendencies. And then based on our experiences in life, maybe they get amplified or pushed off center from where they should be. And so part of what God wants to do is to bring us back to whatever our center is. That doesn't mean we're all going to be, you know, exactly the same.
Going back to me, because I'll use myself as an example on that. Transparencies. But Christian walk, I've been accused of not loving people. And one day I came to the realization that if I didn't love them, I'd just keep my mouth shut. Because in a sense, I'm a protector. I will warn people, meaning I warn the church, be careful of that guy, something's coming. I can't tell you what it is, but you need to just watch him. I'm a protector.
He's not pointing at you. You're pointing at Mark.
He's too oversensitive. But you know, that's just what I do. When you do that, you even out of the people you're just trying to protect, they're going, You don't love. You have a hard time loving people. I'm going, I love all of you, and that's why I'm doing it. You know? But it comes out because I'm not afraid to tell people what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Something you've seen me,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange world.
Yeah. Well, I'm a real big believer that, you know, at the bottom of this, I mean, he didn't say love is transparent, but I think it is. You know, I think if you look at these things, if you look at the fact that love isn't trying to protect itself, right? I mean, when you really
yeah.
look at it, love
mm-hmm.
suffers, it doesn't envy it,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't seek its own. There's a sense in which when you really get down to why aren't people transparent? Why aren't we transparent all the time? It's because we don't trust and we're afraid of being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what's mixed in that is feeling that we have to protect ourselves, you know, that we nobody else is going to look out for me, so I better look out for myself, and some of it is in cases where we do suffer wrong and it hurts a great deal. But when it here, it's essentially saying part of what it's saying is trust God in relationships so that you don't have to protect. You have to be wise, but you don't have to protect yourself, and you don't have to fear relationship because you can trust God for that. And I think, especially when you look at where things have gotten in a relationship with two people, right? It's like an equation. Certain things happen, and they get calibrated with one another. And for things to change, one side has to change that equation.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are situations where you have to take risk or do things. You have to throw away your rights or take risks or be open to being hurt in order to even get transparency from that other person. So there's a sense where it's like a dance. And if one person's doing certain dance moves, the other person has to do the other one to keep the dance going. But if you just quit dancing or change the one side, then that throws things into a change for the other person as well. So I think that comes into it too, where ultimately in relationship what we're trying to get to is we're trying to get to a place. I mean, if we didn't have sin, we would have transparency, right? I mean, and that's one of the big blessings of eternity. I mean, we're glorified. Is that, I mean, what I'm talking about is Adam and Eve, right? Realizing they were naked and ashamed, right? I mean, when you really take it all, reel it all the way back, they were naked and unashamed. I mean, that what that's saying is, who knows what all it's saying, but part of what it's saying is there was transparency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was transparency. They could look right at each other, and there was no feeling of being ashamed, of being exposed. So it's almost like in human relations, what we want to do is we want to go back to the Garden of Eden, in a sense, and each person we meet, there's an opportunity to get a certain amount of that transparency, more or less, right? Depending on how long we know them, what we've been through together. In a marriage, you can get a lot of that transparency. It's still not like the Garden of Eden, but there's the opportunity to get a lot of transparency there. And then people that we're more casual with, or we don't know as well, then we're going to come into that, and in a wise way, we're going to come into that not bearing our soul nearly as much until we develop that trust. So I think part of what this whole love thing is about too is it's enabling us to go deeper in transparency and relationship, because we're not reacting in ways that put up barriers or that cause offense. So I guess my thinking on the love thing is part of what love is about, a big part of what it's about is relationship, and that involves being real.
Wouldn't that be amazing to be in like the Garden of Eden setting, like we're all going to be someday, and just don't have to, this doesn't have to be that, it's like automatic trust without even knowing. I mean, just trust,
because
you just have it. You just know, it's all that stuff is gone.
It's kind of like having a kid.
Yeah.
A child.
Yeah.
That's what
Well, that's the whole picture of the New Jerusalem being made of glass. Mm-hmm. Basically see-through walls. I mean, it's the whole idea. There's nothing to hide. Nobody has anything to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I can't even imagine that. I can't even imagine that. I mean, it's the first time I've ever thought of it like that.
You can a little bit. If you have the privilege to be with a strong believer who's still coherent, who genuinely loves the Lord, who has a clear understanding, at the end, you're going to see love that just knocks your socks off. So when a good friend dies or something, and it's really cool. It had to happen a couple times. So if you want to see these things come in action, someone they know they're going to be with the Savior in a matter of hours or maybe a few days. In most cases, it was hours. and you're going to see so many things in one's life melted away. And I can only put it in one word, and that's priorities. Suddenly, love can wipe away all the, if you're in the love they're talking about, all those other non-essentials get melted away in your priorities. What is truly important really is at the core, and you can see it in these people just before they go to heaven. And I've been with people who aren't saved, and it's a different, it still could be good, but it's a bittersweet, but it's not the same. When you're with a mature believer just before
mm-hmm.
they die, it is, don't give up that opportunity to spend
mm-hmm.
time with somebody,
mm-hmm.
As hard as it is. So anyway, yeah, it's really true. All of this is just backed up completely when you spend a few hours with an
mm-hmm.
old friend who's just about to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you speak about, I say this from experience because I was all concerned about all the things he needed to do and how he was going to take care of his wife and all that. And he kind of put it in all perspective, and it just, like, after a while, it's like, I just didn't need to worry about that. We just talked about better things. Pure things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you ever get there, definitely don't give up that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I think there are a lot of those opportunities that they're real tough situations where people die and you're right there. But they're really rich
mm-hmm.
too. And what you said, Jerry, that's a really big deal too, that innocence. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, kids aren't innocent, right? They have
right.
a sin nature, but
no, but they're trusting.
But they have a trusting aspect
yeah.
and an openness.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll go off with a stranger.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to. You know, that's
yeah.
a bad thing sometimes.
Yeah.
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 It's what they are.
Everything's
yeah.
different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in God's ultimate world, that wouldn't be a concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is, and when you really look at a lot of the scriptures, boy, there's a lot of time that's really basically pointing back to this whole idea of innocence, trust, transparency, love. The rest of it, everything else in the Bible about what Jesus came and did and the history and all that, it's really all to bring that all about,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You know, when Jesus says, unless you're like one of these little ones, you know, you won't see the kingdom of God. That might be part of what he's talking about there. I don't
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how we get there, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of good stuff. Wow.
Yeah.
So he says, the last phrase, love never fails. Now that, I mean, there's a lot of ways of thinking about what does that exactly mean, but one of the things that brought to my mind this week because I was looking at this last week, trying to make sure I'm ahead of everybody else when we get here, because I'm supposed to know something about this stuff before we get here, and I'm not Superman, so
I have to study.
But so I've been, thinking through this passage a lot, obviously, and then at the same time, that passage I was doing for the sermon was on martyrdom.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting overlap, because when you read some of the books that have accounts of different martyr situations, when you get to the end of the situation, it's love never fails. You know, you see the power of love when people are put in situations that should bring forth hatred and extreme anger, and like Stephen, and yet there's spirit-inspired, basically supernatural love that people exhibit by their actions and the things they say and do in the midst of these unspeakable situations. That's where you see that love can prevail if love is really being practiced, love will always win. It will always win. It's unstoppable because of the very nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's selfless and it's other-centered and it can surmount anything. So anyway, when I see that phrase and think about it after reading some of these accounts and stuff, it just really brought home that it's, you know, it's like nuclear fusion or something, you know. Love, if you could, the essence of love, it's so powerful. I mean, and that's the, you know, the cross of Christ is the same thing. That's why the gospel is so powerful, because at its core, it's love. It's love, and it's love for the unlovable, for those who deserve wrath. You know, and it's complete selflessness on the part of God. And so that's the power of it, and it even gets through to the torturers and the tormentors and the people who are inflicting the martyrdom, not always, but in many cases. It's so powerful, what they saw is so powerful that they can't get it out of their head until finally Jesus gets a hold of them too. So I think it's one of those things that sometimes love is considered to be weak, you know, in the world. You know, people who are love are weak. You know, they don't really understand how things have to be, or et cetera.
Well, it's kind of the same
but
idea as a soft answer turns away wrath. And not saying that right,
yeah.
But you know, to someone who's really aggressive and yelling, a soft answer, well, they won't know what to do with it, you know.
Throw them off.
Yeah, and it has an effect. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea, you know.
Comment what you said, Tony. Yeah, it's the most powerful of all things. Without love, what are we? We wouldn't be going to heaven if anybody still. I mean, it's brilliant. Gospel's brilliant idea. You really study it, and the love that God showed, the way he did it is absolutely, when you think about it, it's incredibly brilliant how someone who has nothing can be huge, and somebody who's huge in this world gets forced down, right down to the ground, to the lowest level, which is, in the sense, like a child.
Mm-hmm.
They have to. And it's brilliant. This whole book is brilliant, and
mm-hmm.
even this passage about love is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I think it was probably the primary reason why we were created in the first place was love.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fact that God gave us this, created us like Him, and gave us this ability to make decisions, and the reason that we go through all this stuff is to make the decision to love Him and not to love evil. And so it's, I think it's one of the big reasons we were created, if not the biggest reason that we were created. Probably people have different opinions of that.
Yeah, well, he didn't create us because he was bored and needed something to do,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what I used to think. Well, I thought a lot of stupid things, but that was one of the, near the top of the list. Well, God must have been, you don't want to go into the mind, especially
pre-salvation, Kevin.
It was horrible.
Let's put that away.
I can't remember where it is, but something about us, we're to be administrators, but he didn't. He doesn't need administrators.
Yeah.
He didn't create us for that purpose, you know. And it's why Jesus did what he did, his great love for us. It's a big little word.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for that time when everybody's just all going to have that perfect. That's going to be so cool.
Yeah.
That is going to
get rid
be
of
so
passwords, keys.
Happens the last of
it's one day closer than it was yesterday.
I'll hang on heaven for a while. I won't be all day. I'm sure heaven's pretty cool too.
Yeah, but just to You know, because when people, sometimes you can run across people that are just so giving and all of that, but it's this other kind of giving. It's not a love. It's not, you know, so you can't trust, you can't even trust nice things like that because
there's a motive behind it.
And it's just, that's why it's so hard to be around other people sometimes. You're just like, I know where you are, and that's just, I don't know what to do with that because.
And most of the time, we know where they are because it's where we are too.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. Or where we've been.
Or where we could be.
And you want to tell them that you want to share, but you know, it just gets so complicated.
Yeah, it does, and I think that's the whole issue that you know, sin begets sin and escalates and complicates things. I mean, when we come up to interact with somebody, that's really what it comes down to is. Part of the we react certain ways because we've been hurt by sin, our own sin and the sin of others,
mm-hmm.
and so that puts us into a pattern, right?
Yeah.
A flight pattern or something, you know. So like, we come up into a situation. It's already in a sense the choreography is already partly mm-hmm. written about how things are going to go because of the history of what happened to us before.
Yeah.
And that's part of what the scripture is trying to break through is to get us to a place where it says. You're going to be willing, you're willing to not go in that pattern, even though you know that you're not going to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're willingly laying aside that protection because you so want to see something do different. I'm not saying be unwise, but I'm just saying in general that we could get so jaded by what happens to us that then we are unable to even come close to what would make a real relationship trustworthy. It's just like. When you talk to people who get in a relationship and the relationship doesn't work out, right? And then there's a tendency then not to risk that love
mm-hmm.
and not to
mm-hmm.
risk a relationship. And that's not what God doesn't want that. He wants us, when that thing happens, he wants us to still be willing to have that relationship. Because the richness of the relationship and the transparency and the love, that's the value of human interaction and existence, and God doesn't want us not to have that just because it hasn't worked in the past. And that's the challenge of when we come to Christ and we're a new creation, as part of it is renewing our minds so that we are willing to knowingly bear things that we wouldn't have before
mm-hmm.
because we just wouldn't.
I think the Bible speaks of that, not falling back into a pattern when it says I can't think of where it's at, but he says, do not think about what you're going to say beforehand. So,
oh, yeah.
And but wait, and the Spirit will give you the words. So that's breaking you out of that pattern.
Because
I found myself, now what am I going to say? Mm-hmm. Well, just go on into it. It'll come to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Read it yesterday in the sermon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's a, you know, it's sin is, how do you want to put it, sin is self-reinforcing almost,
mm-hmm.
where, and I don't mean like addictions, I'm just talking about the fact that the way the world operates, a lot of the stuff that's screwed up about how the world operates is a result of the reality of sin. And it's not just sin that screws things up, it's the reactions to sin and the need to protect yourself and not trust and all those sorts of things that they're not necessarily, we don't necessarily see them as sin, but they're fallout from sin, and they make it all that much harder to break through to love and transparency like God ultimately wants. And so it's like a snowball, you know, this little thing, you know, there's this small snowball, and in this relationship you get hurt, and now that changes now how you're going to react to people and interact with people. So now next time the snowball's a little bigger because it's got that layer now of how you're going to react as well, and then that happens a few times to where people get so jaded that they won't trust anyone, or you know, all women are such and such. I've heard that
mm-hmm.
from guys sometimes. Women are like this. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
don't go there.
Yeah.
Don't go there.
Yeah.
Because because when you start doing that, painting with these broad brushes and saying it's always such and such, you're building, you're adding snow to the snowball.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is strip the snow off mm-hmm. the thing to where you treat each person for who they are.
Yeah.
And you don't bring all this baggage in, well, because, you know, six people were this way, the seventh is going to be that way. Because as soon as, you know, there's some wisdom in knowing what you're doing, but I'm just saying that to the degree that you start making everybody a cookie cutter of your experience in the past, then there's no hope of breaking through to anything better, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot to think about, for sure.
Especially those last words you said, Tony. We should all take that to heart.
Yeah.
Which one?
Who hasn't been in it? Well, he just referred to how we have a tendency to stereotype a situation.
Yeah.
I can tell, Sid, you've gone through stuff. I have too, and it's like we have this commando shield here. You have to love of Christ come in and wash some of it away. Not all of it. You can keep some of it. As far as
not personally,
but the love of Christ can do incredible things. It's just again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's blocked by the world a little bit, but you can lower it a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you've been stepped on by everybody that comes around you, you expect to be stepped on. So you start running away from them.
Somebody as intelligent as you can back off a little bit. Okay. you can say,
ask Kathy, I've backed off a lot.
Yeah, I've seen tough old birds that would have no trouble taking somebody out,
mm-hmm.
have a deep love for Christ that would die for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see transformation in a massive way.
Yeah,
if you're willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're supposed to be transformers. Somewhat.
Yeah.
Okay, so, hey, you guys... Got anything more on this simple passage?
Yeah.
What does it mean, believe all things?
Good question.
Yeah, that is a good question.
What do you think it doesn't mean? What do you think it might mean?
I don't think it would mean that you have to believe everything he's telling you.
He's not saying love is naive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think he's not. So, what do you think it means? If you were teaching me and I was a little kid, came in, and it was just do me on Sunday school, and I said, what does that mean, believe all things? What would Riley say?
Because
it also says hopes all things and endures all things. So the all things is repeated... Three times there, and I think it's a similar concept. But so you know, it doesn't mean literally believe everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, just I don't know, but looking at it, it kind of seems like it means that I don't know. You just keep. I don't know if it doesn't. Does it mean like believing in someone, like just trusting that they'll come through on something, or is it? I don't really know.
Well, I'm not sure anyone really knows except Paul, but the Apostle Paul. But what other people? Does anyone else have thoughts on that?
I kind of think it. It's telling us to be optimistic about situations,
mm-hmm.
like. Believe that there's good in this. Believe that this is an optimistic situation, and there's good that can come. Believe that in every situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's just you know.
There's a part of me that says I trust you, even though I don't agree with you all the time. That you're that you know, not every Christian's going to believe, you know, agree with each other from, you know, different passages in the Bible or, you know, revelations or whatever. But I trust you enough to know that your opinion of me is not going to change, and you trust me enough that my opinion of you is not going to change.
Yeah.
I can trust you that you're not going to go run off and telling people that Sid's this. I could just trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I think that belief says.
Mm.
And I was going to say, believe the best at whatever you're seeing.
Mm.
That
mm-hmm.
might be really naive, but that's my Pollyanna world.
I do think it's getting back to what Jerry was talking about, the outlook of a child, the innocence, believing the best. Because you can come to the, you know, it's the glass half full, glass half empty deal,
mm-hmm.
right? If you come with a glass half empty approach to things where you're always looking at the there's possibilities. Things you don't know for sure are possibilities,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's a lot of things you don't know for sure. You don't know, you know, like somebody said something about you in some meeting somewhere and you hear about it or whatever. You don't really know what went on there. You weren't there, and you heard about it second or third hand, and you don't know what the motives are of the person who told the person who told the person who told you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are you going to do? You know, that's an example. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to believe the worst? You know, are you going to caps half empty? Are you going to run with that and make that into an issue? Or are you going to look past that? You're going to look at it and say, look, there's human dynamics, there's people involved, I don't really know what went on. I'm going to believe the best about that. The best possible, knowing what I know, I'm going to side with the good. I think that's what he's trying to say in these things about hoping and enduring and bearing. Is, I mean, when you bear under something, you're not bearing under it with the idea that it's never going to serve any purpose and it's never going to change and I'm just going to bear it forever. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would, and I think what he's saying.
Half empty glass.
Yeah, that's the glass completely empty.
I like Kathy's
better. I think part to me, when I look at it, part of the idea is saying that believing that love never fails,
mm-hmm.
and therefore, when we walk in these attributes of love, that there will be, it will be beneficial and things will be improved ultimately, and so we have real hope, and we endure because our endurance isn't in vain, that ultimately there will be a positive result that comes from it. So to me, that's part of what the believing and bearing and hoping and enduring all things is. It's not just, you know, being Atlas under the weight of the world and grumbling but sitting there. It's a belief that as God's sheep doing things God's way, that we can trust that God will produce good from it even if we can't see it, as opposed to just like being naive, right? And I believe everything, whatever anyone says to me. I mean, somebody who's wronged me 50 times, he comes the 51st time and tells me something, I'm just going to believe it flat out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what it,
no,
that's not what it means. I think it has this idea of, you know, hoping and believing and enduring for a positive result, and not because part of what this whole thing about love is that you wrap yourself up like a mummy in a cocoon because you get hurt all the time,
mm-hmm.
and as a result, your tendency is to be negative. Tendency is to move you in a direction where you're protective, you're withdrawing, your things are not going to work out, that guy's going to double cross me, he's a dirty rat, you know. There's that whole mindset that turns in on itself and turns in a in a...
Turns you bitter.
Yeah, it turns you bitter. It turns you in a recessive direction. And, you know, you there's no way that you could even really walk in love when you're thinking that way, it seems like.
Can I use a football analogy?
Yeah.
I'm asking for your permission. And, of course, any football analogy...
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know if you used
it. It's completely shallow as opposed to this, right? But you listen to...
Say it anyway.
No, listen to Russell Wilson after a loss, right?
Yeah.
After he plays badly and mm-hmm. his team loses. It could be some guile. It could be he's working the media, but it could also be that he believes what he's saying. This is an opportunity for me to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that like a robot after every game he plays. So either that he believes that, or he's so slick. There could be some of both. I'm not, you know. But I think that's kind of the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Even when I failed, or people have failed me, I am not going to wear that cloak of negativity. Yes, I'm going to be wise, but I'm not going to just surround myself with that I failed, you know, right? That's kind of the idea of what you're saying. So it puts a little Russell Wilson in there.
Go hot.
Well, I think of a mother whose son is on death row or whatever, and she still loves him tremendously. And I think deep in her heart, she believes that everything's going to be okay for her son. She believes that everything's going to work out okay. Not necessarily, you know, I mean, even if he's dead, I mean, they electrocute him or whatever, that somehow her son's going to end up in heaven or whatever, you know, and it's going to turn out okay for him. And so that, I think, is an agape-type love, that, you know, a mother's love for a child, say it was a criminal or whatever, or not the best, I mean, mothers love their kids, you know. And I would think next to godly love, I think a mother's love for a child might be one of the closer things to a godly love. And so I would kind of lean in that direction. I don't know if that's what you were saying.
I guess part of what, and I'm not saying I'm right, because you know a lot of people have talked about this passage a lot. And there's some, you know, this is like the kind of thing that people want to go ask Paul when they get to heaven, right, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly did you mean there? but I do think it does have that idea that, you know, it is rare you'd find a mother who's negative about, who's just lost hope in their children, right? Mm-hmm. Even if things haven't gone well, they're still... thinking it's going to...
They're always picturing this little baby that they held in their arms.
Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect to it, and I think that's part of what it's saying is don't be jaded. Don't be... don't allow the reality of sin to cause you to mirror it, mm-hmm. but be separate from that and be able to live in hope and bear things in a way that are looking at the destination that God has through the clouds that are in the face right now of sin and messed up world, but where are we really going, and that's the ultimate goal that God's bringing about. So when we're bearing and enduring, it's not just to build our character. It actually is going to, there's going to be results that come from it, even if we can't see it ourselves. We know that the one who tells us to do it is ultimately a good God, and he's going to bring good out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I figure if I run to ask Paul what he meant by that, he'll say, I'll go ask God, because he's the one who told me to write it down.
Actually, by that time comes along, we're going to know all things.
Well,
all mysteries.
Yeah, right. Well, next time we can get into the next section, which has a lot of questions associated with it, too. So we didn't really answer your question, but we tried.
Yeah.
So that's all question. You can say about a question like that.
It's as optimistic as you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Family joke.
Yeah. Well, okay. The love passage, the easiest passage in the world to go through. Actually, I thought the stuff you guys shared on was awesome.